I'll try and talk through reasonably quickly because I'm a much more hands-on person who can take the top off the computer and have a prod at and all that sort of stuff. Right. So, So a little bit about LSR, how the Titanium project came about, what it's trying to achieve, some random jottings of ideas that I have of things that you could do in the future, or software that might be appropriate to write for it, and those sorts of grandiose ideas, and then yes, some questions at the end I'm sure you'll have on the way. So, LSR was founded nearly a year ago, and based in a very grandiose looking building. That's a very flattering photo. If you go and visit it in person, it's just a concrete cube. I would not, it's quite depressing. I wouldn't go in there if you paid me money. But yeah, that's the... Oh, and I should add, it's not all LSR. that window just next to the cleaner's cupboard. That's more the scale you should be thinking of. Yeah, it's the Innovation Centre on the outskirts of Cambridge. And then... obviously I was here a couple of months ago talking to you on behalf of Rule, so I do have split personality disorder, so I'm here at LSR today and hopefully I won't conflict with anything I said on behalf of Rule. And if I'm here as Spro writing things, then again I may conflict with myself. I'm not trying to. Basically, LSR is you need, if you want to sell things, to be able to back register, you need to be a company. The information commissioner, if you ever collect people's private information, like their postal addresses and things, you need to register for that. And if you need to buy a range of MAC addresses for the IEEE and the IEEE, you need a company again. So lots of things are steering towards needing to set up a company, rather than say the stuff that I do with the BBC Micro add-ons that I've been making for many years, which I do with my Spro add-on. In case you haven't guessed, so it's very cunning. The graphics designer is quite clever. LSR is shift right, if you know machine code and ARM code. So that's a shift right symbol. Oh, it was quite clever. I paid him his money. So, Titanium, which is the, I love Wikipedia's description, it's a lustrous transition metal. That's quite good. It's the 22nd comet number 22. So titanium has been kind of brewing the back of my head for probably 2 or 3 years waiting for the stars to align, where something where you can really make an overstretch in the specification. If I think back to when the Ionix came out, that was 3 or 4 times faster than the RISC-V at the time. We had gigabit Ethernet. Why do you need gigabit Ethernet? No one will use that. And a couple of years later, oh yeah, we need gigabit Ethernet. So lots of things, just trying to reach as far forward into the future as possible, spec-wise. Because I do feel, as I swap back to my rule hat, an awful lot of time the rule is spent in porting to the next hardware platform. You're sort of always having always chasing your own tail. As soon as you finish one thing, oh, you know, Raspberry Pi comes out, and you finish another, oh, PandaVoice comes out. You're always chasing yourself. So hopefully by jumping as far forward into the future as possible, that then gives some time to backfill and fill in the things that never quite get finished. I'm thinking it's a DSP on the keyboard board that's doing nothing because no one had any time to write the DSP coding to do MP3D coding or something like that on the BeagleBoard really quite nicely using that DSP. But because by the time you finish the BeagleBoard port, another board has come along, you're then having to divert your effort all the time to porting to the next chip along. There's also been a bit of a change in direction of ARM. They've basically realised that they've completely stitched up the mobile phone market. Everyone's mobile phone, the mobile phone in here, uses an ARM chip. And they've kind of run out of road there. So once you've got 90% of the market, getting that 91%, 92% is so much extra effort. They're looking for new markets, and there's quite a lot of stuff for ARM where they're going much more to the performance end of the scale. So the more recent architectures, the ARM architecture 8 has recently come out, that they're targeting it towards server platform things, partly because of its low power use that it's inherited from being in a mobile phone where you need to run up a battery. But ARM's direction is definitely heading into as many MIPS as possible for as little power as possible. So I've gotten a bit of a tangent there, that the reason why you want to do that in a server application is not because anyone cares about how much electricity the server uses, but because all of your money goes on the air conditioning plant to cool the building down. So that's why if you look at the bill for a server farm, that's for Google's search engine, most of the money is going on the air conditioning plant, and very little of it goes on powering the processor. So if you can choose a processor that doesn't get hot, you save all your money on the air conditioning bill. Anyway, that was a diversion. And the other thing that I've been looking at, coming down to my last point, being designed for purpose. So there's always, RISC-V has a sort of shopping list of things that it really likes to see. So being able to save your CMOS settings in CMOS, having a real-time clock, which the Raspberry Pi doesn't have. So you can add on these extra bits and bobs. For the Raspberry Pi, you can buy a real-time clock upgrade. But yeah, having something that ticks off all RISC-V's shopping list items, which then saves you time not having to write new drivers. So RISC-V already knows how to talk to real-time clocks and CMOS chips and that sort of thing. So if you just put the real-time clock or CMOS chip on the board, then you don't have to bother writing the driver. And I also looked inside a lot of, Chris Hall has photos on his web pages of cases that are made from Perspex. And you always end up with a ball of spaghetti because the board in the middle is, you know, yay big, but then you need a hub because you haven't got enough USB ports, and then you need an adapter because it doesn't have a video connected to it quick enough, and then you need all sorts of spaghetti that ends up in a case. And I think if I look, basically the BeagleBoard is designed as a mobile phone development platform. They've deliberately chosen something to show off the fact that you can make it as small as possible, you can stack chips on top of each other, all that sort of stuff. I look at the PandaBoard, it's also a mobile phone development platform, although it's got Wi-Fi for a laptop, but look, their mobile phone chip set. Raspberry Pi, guess what? Mobile phone chip. And the IMX6, that's also a mobile phone development platform. So they're all, because of ARM's heritage of making low-power chips for mobile phones, you tend to end up with a lot of mobile phone development boards. And that doesn't quite that didn't quite fit for me. That wasn't what I wanted inside my desktop computer case. So with titanium, wherever possible, we've gone for following industry standards. So it's in a, I don't know if anyone's picked these up at the show, there are a few sounds here. So this is what's known as a DTX form factor case, which if you try and search for that, you won't find very many search hits. It's a very strangely named standard that didn't really take off. But I'll quickly backpedal on what I just said there. But it is a subset of the micro ATX and the ATX. So the ATX was the original massive PC motherboard with 6 ISA slots and all that thing, the size of a Sabutio football pitch. And then the micro ATX, which is what the Ionix was, is much the same with only 4 expansion card slots. And then the DTX, which is what titanium is the next size down. But all of the screw holders are all in the same place. So although it's a DTX form factor, and if you try and Google that, it's a bit of a weird form factor, it does fit any standard ATX case. See later when I take stuff on this one, that was a case from box.co.uk, about £20, just generic black PC ATX case, nothing special about it at all. And ports coming out of all its ears. Why have one port when you can have 2? Why have one USB port when you can have 8? Why have one video port when you have 2? Why have one SATA port when you have 4? So many ports, all of them bristling, and most of them sticking out at the back of the case, fortunately. So again, a standard PC case, you have the standard I.O. panel at the back of the case where everything comes out, with the exception of the PCI Express card, of course, set internal to the case. Right, there's a bit of a timeline now. So, as I said, this has been brewing in my mind for quite a long time, and the original first 2 prototypes came back, which I hand-collected on a train from a kitchen in Hertfordshire where they were being built. First 2 prototypes in November 2014, amazingly. It worked first time, lucky. No smoke came out. There were a few minor embarrassing wire modifications. I won't go into those in too much detail, but there are a few things that I got back to front. Transmit, receive, you win some, you lose some. And those 2 boards had what at the time was the Rev A version of the chip, which did turn out to have a few weird errata in it, but as it was reasonably early on in the development, it was reasonably easy to just walk around those, knowing that they'll be dealt with by the time the next lot of chips came out. So, yeah, very shortly after November 2014, probably November the 2nd, 2014, work started on the RISC-OS port. And for a lot of this, you really don't need to go to the point that everything's at now. You just need to exercise each of the ports to enough of a point that you can take it for compliance testing. So it doesn't particularly matter if the serial port's fixed at 1 speed, because you only need to test that one at the test house, and you can go back later and fill in all the other serial port speeds, for example. Yeah, the very first thing that huge text and did say hello, on my PC report, and that was followed by enough of a video driver to allow me to get one fixed screen mode. So again, your first pack doesn't really need to be a polished all singing or dancing driver. You just need to get enough stuff to show a default screen on a VGA monitor, and that's then enough to take it for EMC testing. That occupied 3 months, I would think, allowing for Christmas. Yeah, first lot of EMC testing, not so hot. For anyone who doesn't follow what this is, so the red line is the Class A limit line, so you definitely need to be below that one, otherwise you can't sell it. And the green line underneath is the Class B limit line, which if you want to be used in industrial applications, that requires a lot of hardware to reach. So, the mathematicians in here, we're definitely at least 23 dB above the limit line, so that's not so good. But the 23 dB is a factor of us on 200 in linear terms. The Rev A boards were a little bit on the noisy side. I have to go back and do some more EMC testing in a few months' time. then after the first lot of testing, so you know that at least a basic port works on each of the interfaces around the board. So RISC-V is running, you've got some graphics, you can type on a keyboard, you can load and save files, SD cards for the first one to first interface to use. SR then went ahead and sponsored Piccolo Systems, the artist also known as Ben Averson, to rewrite ABFS as you knew, know and love from the RISC-V and the Ionic, but in C this time. So if you've rummaged around on rules source code, you'll know that ADFS is written in thousands and thousands of lines of intractable, gnarly assembler that's kind of grown and mutated since it was first written for the Archimedes. In fact, we've still got the Archimedes floppy disk drive drivers buried in there somewhere, so it's quite tangled up. So starting with FTFS, which is the SD card filing system that Piccolo Systems wrote, take all that SD card specific stuff out, and you then end up with ADFS, Advanced Disk Filing System, and then underneath that is a module called Starter Driver, which is the bit that then talks to the starter ports, which is what hard disk that the slides are being loaded from, and also the CD-ROM drive in the front of the case. So it supports the port multiplier, the port multiplier of the board, which then supports the four ports that hang off the port multiplier. I put the word port enough here. Port multiplier. So that was kicked off in March 2015, and took, we won't see that coming to fruition until at least two more slides along. That then allowed us to know that the last of the interfaces, which is the starter interface, was working, and that may also have been where the most wire mods were. I apologise to Ben for sending him off down lots of blind alleys for a few weeks. We were then able to spin the beta prototype, which is what the board in this case actually is, the second revision of the board. So I was lucky enough to have the Rev-V chips as well, so that had all of the annoying problems solved that the Rev-A chips had. It was to take that to EMC testing and pass, having fixed all of the noisy problems. And then do all the other boring temperature testing and other compliance testing, and kick off the data slightly back to front there, kick off a port of Linux. So not only can it run RISC-V, this board also runs Linux, and I didn't bring it with you today, for customers who are interested in using the stuff that Linux brings, so things that are in embedded or industrial applications. And then, I love my next set of photos. Designed a cardboard box, very flat, on the edge of your seat there. A nice bit of corrugated B flute, anybody? No? Have an interesting colour box.
That was mega.
That's made by a nice company in, called Vale Pack in Grantham. There it is. Isn't she a beaut? I do also have photos on my camera of friends and family, not just cardboard boxes and circuit boards. So, yeah, cardboard box. Right, here we are in July. Ben delivered to me the first bootable version of ADFS, which then got bashed to death. There's a tool called FS Bash in the rule sources, which does random read, write, modify, delete, rename, set type, all sorts of filing system operations. Anyway, you just leave that running and leave it crashing it until the disk becomes full and then it stops. So that running for, I lost the actual number of times it ran, but about 750,000 cycles. So quite a lot of, a lot easier than manually clicking. Then it went for some baking in an oven. So the chip is specced to from 0 to 90 Celsius. So I need to know what the temperature rise above ambient is when it's doing stuff, so that you know then where to set the production limit. So I set that going. I particular retro knob here, which obviously a BBC Master was involved, as they are with most of my projects. So it was tested in a loop doing 4 minutes of intense work, so it was actually doing a wrist PT ROM build, and then it shuts itself down, and then 1 minute later, so in other words, beast matches every 5 minutes, it clicked its cassette relay motor, which then did the equivalent of pressing the front panel button, and it boots back up again, and then it sits doing 4 minutes of intense work, and then it puts counts itself down again, and then dink, beast master turns it back on again. So it's that doing that, and you just leave that baking away at 60 Celsius until golden brown. And then at the opposite end of the scale, you want to check what happens when you get it too cold. Does it still boot up? What happens at low temperatures? So it was chilled in a freezer. Same deal. 4 minutes of intense work, power off. Use the micro, turns it back on a minute later. The only weird thing that happened at -5 Celsius is that the mouse pointer, rather than being that shape, you imagine you dipped it in some paint, it's splurged across the screen. So. For that reason, the spec starts at 0 Celsius, not -5. And mouse worked fine, it just looked really weird on the screen with a sort of quantum leap black splurge to the right. Very strange. So, having got to that point, it was ready to sell. But unfortunately, at that point, everything's still under NDA. The chip is still secret, and I'm afraid I'm too scared of the lawyers that I signed the NDA with to be able to tell anyone. Got some time on my hands, what should I do? Oh yeah, I can make a keyboard. So, if I'm mainly using the mouse at the moment, probably just cut out. So, made a keyboard. Inspired by the BBC Micro again, having sat watching a BBC Master controlling the oven, why not have some funky red function keys? And also, I always miss not being able to press control brake on a wrist PC. So we now have a brake key back again. And my general dislike of the Windows flag logo replaced that with a Windows wrist cog logo instead. I think these are definitely this is a Marmite kind of a situation. If you like the rubbery keyboards. That's $4.99, then yeah, that's fine. I've actually got a rubbery keyboard in another situation, but there's something quite nice about being able to type like that while I'm not using it for the next 5 or 6 slides. Pass around the room, you'll either get a Marmite feeling or your luggage will hate it, so it's a different type of tactile way to type. Some people hate it. So yes, the production design went out at the beginning of August 2015. Went off to the factory in... it's waterproof, yeah. Off to the factory in Hitchin again, and I got boards back the second week of October. And coincidentally, the chip was also then made public on the 7th of October. So all starting to tie up quite nicely. Got boards in my hands. I'm allowed to talk about them at last. And there's a show coming up. Fantastic. All the stars have aligned. So I then went round and visited down on the south coast CGA Micros and up to Warrington to see Arcom. Looking for prospective retail partners, so the idea being that LSR sells motherboards, and that keeps that part of the operation nice and simple, but then to allow Arcom and CGA Micros to also make a few quid in putting it in a case, offering support, putting all their software titles, hundreds of software titles that I didn't know about. So all the extra sort of backfilling that as an engineer doesn't particularly excite me, I'll be perfectly honest. Copying hard disks all day, not my kind of thing. The idea being that if you're tech savvy and happy with a screwdriver, then by all means buy a motherboard direct from LSR, put it in the case. I'll take the top of this case when I finish talking. Look. but also to be able to let the other kind of the dealers in respect also make some money off the work from titanium. And on the download page on Rule's website, there's the ROM image that you go onto. It obviously arrives with a ROM image. It'd be rather cruel to send out a board with no ROM on it, but subsequent upgrades can be downloaded from Rule's website as we speak about. And they should eventually, and there's a problem with the nightly builds, but eventually the nightly builds will also appear on Rule's website. So if you're brave enough to upgrade your machine every night, then that will be available to download, but that's the table that won't have the problem with it. Right, there are other bits and bobs. There's a technical reference manual available if you like looking at circuit diagrams and reading about currents and voltages and all those sorts of things. It comes in a folder a bit like the one the RISC-C used to do. It's got a bit of materials. You can look at what resistor value has been used in various places. And there's also a spare part, I think the part number is on the back of here, ES1140, which is the laser cut IO panel, which is in the back of the case. So standard PC cases have a thing called an IO panel, and this is that dimension there, and that height is a industry standard that all cases will have an orifice punched out in that shape at the back of their case. And obviously that marries up correctly with the connector layer in the back of the motherboard. Any more files? There's one more slide. There's a lot of power in this box, and I always feel that RISC-OS never quite makes use of it. Just running a window manager really, really fast. You definitely want some extra applications writing, so there are any budding software authors out there. Here are some ideas I randomly came up with 2 days ago. There are actually 9 spare processors in this box. I'll have to remind myself what they all are. So there's a dual core Cortex A15. Obviously RISC-OS is currently only using 1 of the 4, so there's 1 spare core. And there are 2 dual core Cortex M4s, which is a microcontroller version of the ARM processor. So that's 5 spare cores you've got. And then there's 2 DSPs, which are fairly well known. People who do DSP stuff, it's a TMX320, which is a reasonably well-known digital signal processor, so that can do lots of really fast multiplication and the DSP operations. It's something measured in gigaflops. I was looking at the data sheet a while ago. And then there's a dual-core PowerVR 3D graphics accelerator. So that should be, there's 9 spare processor cores, all just sitting asleep doing nothing. So I feel there's got to be something that can be written to harness some of those. Then there's a whole raft, I was having a quick look on eBay, a whole raft of PCI Express expansion cards. So there's one that LSR already makes, which I have handily fitted, almost as though I knew I was coming here, which is a parallel port, which for me I find useful because my PIC programmer is a parallel port PIC programmer. So, powerful ones, but there are all sorts of other spare PCI Express cards I was looking at. There are FireWire cards, which then made me think, I used to write some video editing. Digital video cameras have FireWire ports on them. You get a FireWire port off eBay for a tenner, why not write a video editor? There's all these spare processor cores. I also thought whether it was worth blowing the dust off a PC emulator as well. I don't know how feasible that is these days. If you have a 1.5 gigahertz processor twiddling its thumbs, we're not emulating PC on it. Now there is a second video head in here, and I'm not going to gamble. Oh, go on, let's gamble. You gamble your projector, see whether your projector can think of it. Go on. There we go. At the moment, it's showing a highly unexciting test card. So, certainly one of the things pretty high up on my shopping list
at the moment is to enable that to allow you to have dual video output. So a bit like Geminis did on the Ionics. From RiskOS's point of view, you tell it, I've got a really wide screen, and then when you send that mode definition file to the video drive, you actually saw it in half and say, well, actually, there's one screen over there, one screen over there, and RiskOS is none the wiser. So that would be the logical thing to do, to make use of that second video effect, rather than just showing a test card, which is a bit dull and boring at the moment. And there's some audio input, some stereo microphone input, and I thought, I've got the DSP not doing anything, why can I not receive voice calls or maybe Skype, I don't know, there's all sorts of things I can think of. So there's lots of hardware sitting waiting for exciting software to be written for it, and hopefully by overstretching a bit on the specification, that's bought enough time that actually some of this stuff gets properly backfilled. I think that was the last one. I might need my keyboard back this year. Let's press escape. Okay. Go on then, how did he get two knots going around the room? I must confess, I wrote the slideshow program last night, so it's only 58 lines of basic, so it didn't get the most thorough of testing my slideshow program. So there we go. I don't think this was loud enough to hear. There is a speaker in the case, which is only a little AFO speaker, I thought. I do like everything that Jim Henson ever made is fantastic. Really well known. David Bowie recently died as well. So, a song with David Bowie in it. There's no CGI involved at all. It is all puppeteers. That's live chicken. There's a great behind-the-scenes shot of it where they just pan the camera out and you see all the puppeteers. Very blatant 2 minutes that's MPEG-2, yeah. It's slightly contorted where I downloaded it from YouTube, converted it to MPEG-4, MPEG-2. That's the sort of thing that I get to do my project there. Yes, in principle, although it's 1925. Or 100, something like that, ratio. Yeah, 1080, yeah, thank you. So I understand Jim Henson's sense of humour in there. A little bit here. Draw an arrow to remember where she's gone. It's somebody's house. This is video. This is actually playing back off the SD card inside. It's not playing off the hard disk. I'll just watch it. I'll shut up. YouTube.com or something like that, which then downloads, if you can't right click and save in YouTube, that got me the MPEG-4 file, and I found another website that you could upload MPEG-4 files and give you MPEG-2 files back again. There you go, then. Yeah, that was not converted on request, no.
Another version of MPEG-4 file recently released
that
now used Neon on
the Hot. Yes, so there's a port of MPEG-4 for requests from Linux, yeah. That's been played back by Kino M. But yeah, there's M players on it. Yeah, probably does. Yeah. I'd have expected that would have supported MPEG-4 as well, which Kino M didn't.
You mentioned earlier, at the very beginning of your talk, about low power and needing to not have aircon and so on. About a year ago, I went to the Computer Museum of Bletchley, and they're trying to reassemble EdTac 1.
All right.
And they say, well, then we'll be able to turn it on, so we'll get new electricity to run the door.
Yeah, if it needs 96 amp three-phase, you know it's using too much electricity.
I remember seeing EdTac 2, I actually did a program for the University Practical.
Okay.
It was full of absolutely packed glowing valves.
Yeah, valves too, yeah. Thermionic valve, where the key word is thermionic. Get hot, gives off electrons. We're getting hot's the important part. Yes, there's a great trick that when I take the top of the case, if I shut down the computer and unplug the power, you can stand watching it for about 2 minutes until the little green light finally fades out. It uses almost no electricity. One of the challenges is finding a power supply that will still turn on. There's a lot of the I was looking at the power supply design point of view, it's fascinating. PC power supply is about that big, maybe about 4 inches tall, and you can now get 1 kilowatt ones. I found that quite amazing. You can fit a 1 kilowatt power supply into a space, the size, half size of a shoebox. But if you get these really big, high power PC power supplies that are designed to power quad-core Pentiums and that sort of thing, The problem is if you then attach it to a titanium, turn it on, it says, oh, hang on, there's no load. Oh, I'm going to turn off again. And you find that they just get, you turn on, and off, turn on, off, on, off, on, off. And you just end up fighting it, it never actually powers on, and it doesn't draw enough power to be able to start up. So yeah, there's a bit of an art form in finding power supplies that are low enough power
that are that they will actually stay turned on.
Big
wire wound resistors can also help. Yeah. If you've got a metal case, just rivet some resistors. Burn that 1 kilowatt. And the CRM, there is a table in the CRM that works out that even if you plug everything in, so you've had all 8 USB ports with stuff plugged in, and you've had all the drives fitted, and you've had all the video heads going, everything turned on, plugged in, expansion cards in every slot, still only 127 watts. So just very difficult to find a super low power supply. But on the flip side, once you have found one, because they often have temperature control fans, the temperature control fan has nothing to do. So the electric fluorescent lights, but I can't hear the fan. The fan is burning. If I put my hand over it, I can feel a breeze. But it's decided that there's so little power being taken that it can turn the fan right down. Which is quite good fun. In a nice quiet room. And a piece of dance magic.
You said earlier that all those previous boards from native Cisco were all primarily built for other purposes.
Yeah.
How is it economic to develop one specifically for a producer?
You'll have noticed as I was whizzing through the slides that there's also a Linux port, and that's essentially how things are being worked. So acknowledging that it's unlikely that the RiskWest side thing is ever going to sell a million units, but the Linux side, percentage-wise, if you just capture 0.5% of that market, then that then pays for the development, and okay, maybe you don't make as much money on the RiskWest side, but that's... The money sloshes around and it all works out okay in the end. But yes, you're right, the economics of scale do not work when you're making hundreds of something as compared with a Raspberry Pi making millions of them. Because a day at the EMC test house, that's £900. So if I make a million Raspberry Pis, actually I should make £1,000 a day, it's massively easier. So it's £1,000 a day at the EMC test house, and you make a Raspberry Pi that you make a million of, and you only need to add 0.1 to each board. And then you pay for that time of the EMC test house. If you only make 1,000 boards, then you need to add £1 to each board to make 100 boards, £10 to each board. So, yes, the economies of scale are quite complicated. I'd love to make millions of these, but my instinct is we're in the thousands territory instead. Hundreds and thousands, not hundreds of thousands.
Are you seeing a reasonable level of interest?
So at the moment, the only ones that have been publicly announced are the RiskWest ones. So obviously the proportion of that is it's quite reasonable. It's been out for a month, came out on the 8th of December, and I'm pleased. Yeah, pile of boxes is going down, that's good. The Linux one is where most of the volume is expected, and that one hasn't been announced yet. The source code is now on GitHub, but it's not been made available yet.
Specific version of it?
Now you're texting me. Debian 8, is that the right answer?
Could be.
That's what I remember the prompt say when I log in. Yeah.
Are you saying those or somebody else?
Yeah, so those will also be available through LSR. Yeah. Ultimately, whether that's where... I'm not necessarily expecting Linux desktop people to be using them, because I think most people recognise that you use Linux on a desktop on a PC, on x86 Intel. So it's more people putting it in rack units in weird situations where, for example, there's no fan on the motherboard, so there's no moving parts. So that then lends itself to situations where having moving parts is bad. So a helicopter, for example, you don't... You're trying to take off in a helicopter. You don't want the fan because everything just falls, all the bolts fall out, everything falls on the floor. So, things where solid state is the key would be an example of that. But I doubt people would use it for a Linux desktop machine. That would be sensible to use a Intel for that.
What do you think it would need to be a
good
desktop machine? Because the fact that it's
Linux
is solid state, it's actually really
appealing. Yeah. I did inquire to the EU for some, forgot what the name of their funding scheme was called, something. But it was a funding scheme about green computing,
And I said, well, we're British, for ARM processors, why can't we do something? And then they turned it down. Yes, maybe I should have put on a French accent and sent the email to my Brussels email account.
When you
say
about the NDA on the chip, which chip is it?
Yeah,
it's
an Texas Instruments AM5728. Remember the part numbers.
How did you get pre-knowledge of that
number? So I had, over a number of years, built a relationship with the field applications engineer, who's unfortunately since left, so I've lost my contact on the inside. But yes, I was actually talking to him about an ARM Cortex M series for a water meter, I think it was. Might have been a street light. It's either a street light or a water meter project. And he said, oh yeah, we've got these roadmap things. He was just flipping through his pile of PowerPoint slides, and I thought, oh, hang on, go back one. Oh, that's a nice chip. Can I have some of those, please? So yeah, there was a lot of chance, yeah, I suppose a lot of things are. Yeah, a lot of things lined up just at the right time. Had I not been in that meeting that day, I'd have missed the PowerPoint slides and I'd not known about anything. Yeah, a lot of luck.
What sort of deal would you have to sign if
you're not
someone who's coming along saying, I
want
to buy a million of these?
Yes, yeah, you need a lot of NDAs, yeah. Well, they don't actually sell the chips, so I don't buy the chips directly from Texas Instruments. That comes from a distributor in Germany. They're not that bothered who buys the chips or where they buy them from. So from their point of view, their input to me was giving me some data sheets and four sampling chips. The cost to them less than $200 probably, and they know that ultimately the sales will come back through distribution.
But then it means the Hitchin company.
Yeah, so Hitchin is just the people in Hitchin that call that EMS that make the boards. That's just an electronics assembly house. I build circuits all the time with all sorts of companies. There was nothing secret about that, was
it? So they're doing that for you? They're not making this board for a wider market?
No, that's right, yeah. So, yeah, I send them a pile of blank circuit boards and big proxy components, and then, yeah, some populated boards come back, yeah. Yeah, they're not, it's not like a reasonable example. It's not like the... the boards are specifically made for LSR. The part numbers on them are LSR part numbers. They're only made for LSR. It's not a design that's been forced in and the logos change or something like that. Which is
going back to the Lilac. Is there any reason why you shouldn't have both operating systems in that box?
In principle, no. Switching between them is probably the complicated bit. So Linux boots through U-boot, which is on the NorFlash chip, on the picture, from the little NorFlash chip, and that then boots from the SD card, which, from a reference point of view, it can be blank, so you don't need an SD card. All of the operating system fits in the same ROM chip, and that's a bit complicated at the moment.
Is there any thought of making, for example, a U-boot boosting version of Resource that you could have U-boot and Resource in the...
Oh, right, you select problem. At boot time? Or
yeah.
Or okay,
right. There's two loads of sources, U-boot and sources of configuration.
Yes, in principle, yes, yeah. The way it's configured at the moment is RISC-OS occupies the ROM. The first instruction in the flash is the first instruction of RISC-OS. Whereas U-boot also wants to fit at that same place. There's currently no way to switch the two to do at boot time. This is a pop the chip out, put it on the desk, put the other chip back in.
Other question, thanks, switching?
Yeah, I should. Well, this is an opportunity there for sideways ROMs, isn't it?
Your question, with ROMs put in.
I could have had a sideways ROM expansion board sitting on the
expansion
Well, it is in a socket, I suppose there's no reason to not make one there. Yeah, so from a software point of view, all you're wanting to do is sort of undo all your tracks, so turn the MMU back off, unjumble all the RAM, put it back into how it used to be when it was first turned on, load the operating system and go. I was working at the weekend on updating the soft load tool, which you use to soft load ROMs on the RISC-V Bionic. It's a very similar set of situation here. You have to undo the memory management, all the changes from the memory management unit, make sure the ROM is in a place that doesn't get stomped on when you next turn, when you reboot as yourself, and then lift up your petticoat tails and jump, and you end up rebooting back into the new ROM image. So yeah, the same thing applies. If it was Linux, you could load the Linux kernel, turn the memory management unit off, petticoat, jump. Yeah.
So obviously,
spare cores. One of which is
this. There's still some extra risk losses at bottleneck for the hardware performance. I think it's also about copy stuff to and from various things and how risk loss was potentially not far from the code.
The situation that I would know that that's the case, so my usual test is that we get...
We might assume that one of them is probably to and from by a sound
My usual test is open a $:\, select my hard disk. I've already opened. Where's Netflix? For me, it's just pouring. It looks to me like pouring data down a drain, which is what it notionally is. So, so that's all done through DMA, and accessing the SD card is done through PIO, so maybe that'll be a bottleneck in that the hardware could go faster. There's also support, when I'm thinking about SD cards, there's also support for ultra-high speed UHS SD cards, and that's not been written yet. That would allow you to go, so you get about 25 megabytes a second off an SD card at the moment. UHS gives you 120 megabytes a second off an SD card when that gets going. So that's another thing that Ben Piccolo is itching to have a go at. But I did make sure I showed him the circuit diagram and said, is that all of the things that you could possibly want? What's your dream SD card socket? So I did lavish one extra transistor on him. The situation with ultra high speed SD cards, that if you eject it, you don't know. So the card has forgotten which mode it's in, but you don't know that it's done that. If you then put it back in again, you don't know. You can't then talk to the card. It's very annoying. Yeah, I added in one extra transistor so that you can power cycle the card in software. He was very happy with that. Three PEOs. as far as I know, interface-wise, talking to the starter interface is all just DMA, so you're just pouring it down the drain as fast as the hardware will take it. I think this has got one. We're not looking at the screen. I do have a parallel port here on the back. So,
what are the graphics in it?
So the each head is limited in a slightly strange way. So the X and Y coordinates for the DMA that's doing all the pixels is 4,000 by 4,000. But in a stunning oversight, the mouse coordinates are signed 11-bit, so 2,000 by 2,000. So, effectively, they've wasted their effort on the graphics, getting the pixels out, because you couldn't then use the mouse. So, it's basically 2K by 2K per head. And then there are two heads, which you would presumably put them onto the cipher file. I have mine at home, vertically above each other. So, you end up with 4K by 2K if you use both heads.
Yeah.
2K by 2K pixels per head.
An individual screen, you know, yeah.
1930 by 1200
is practically the monitor size that you would get.
Yes. Yeah.
Not one of the extra, I'm not sure how they call them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. Not on one monitor, no. I've just put those in the shops, and perhaps it's my own personal problem that my eyes can't resolve pixels that small.
It does
mean
easy by putting these smartphones.
Yes, I went for a job interview. I went for a job interview at the BBC. Which sounds very grandiose when you find out it's the Brighton Business Centre. So I went for a job interview at the Brighton Business Centre about 12 years ago, and smartphones at the time. It was mobile phones with just like a 1-inch by 1-inch screen on it. And they said, we're working on an ASIC custom chip that will allow us to do 2,000 by 2,000 pixels on a 1-inch by 1-inch screen. Have you not worked out what angle of resolution that would be? How small are the rods in my eyeball? No, that's not right. That's not going to work. I think that's probably my view, is that I would rather have two monitors at a resolution that my eyeballs can resolve the pixels rather than a...
London show, not the last one, which I've mentioned, one before,
You must have better eyesight than me.
Well, that was the one with the mouse pointing just a bit half.
Really. Oh, right, yes.
So I used close-up so I knew
where you were.
Yeah. 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 So that was a 40-something extreme, wasn't it?
Yes. So okay, the pixels are at least a big enough size, yeah.
This laptop is a 4K display, and if you set it to one-time scaling, it is quite small.
Yeah, I think...
Compared to the more modern computers,
though,
are HDMI, aren't they?
Yes, so HDMI is electrically the same as a DVI. So, although these are DVI sockets that you see on the back of the motherboard, then you can plug it into an HDMI monitor by using that.
Right.
One of each. In case the projector was the other type, so yeah, go to eBay. Spend £2, get a HDMI to DVI cable instead. Electrically they are the same, they're sending the same data out.
So why the choice of the other thing bigger?
Mechanically more satisfactory, I think is probably the right way of saying it, yeah. So having the locking screws on the side, so not necessarily useful for risk aversion in the desktop sense, but as soon as you put it on a helicopter or anything else that shakes, you don't want non-latching connections because they'll just fall out and fall on the floor.
Yes, I lost a picture on the screen with an HDMI dropping it. Yeah. I got interference.
Yes.
Dropped the vision.
My PVR does that. I have to occasionally wiggle the cable and it must get oxidised or something. You need to see the sound break up.
You only need to
think of
the SCART connector, which I never had, also designed
as a rocket. Yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah.
Especially
good
massive crate
cables. Having done stuff in various bits of broadcast video, I'm used to BNC connectors, the push and twist ones. They don't cough, you can swing the equipment around by those. Whereas, yeah, SCART cables are SCART cables.
When
do you do
these things?
Okay, yeah.
Because there's
going to
be a lot of
stuff
that you can do.
Old VCRs, you've got to swing up on a VCR with a VNC cable. As far as this goes,
I mean, this is just the latest
Apple
product, but it's the current version of Rule
of the Rise. Yeah, this one. Actually the one from Sunday afternoon. I was working on the spinning around with that. Spinning around with the CD drive, so I've left my CD.
Any of the same bills and various current hardware?
No. Same version, but you need a different bill for each.
Yes, yeah. In the same way that RISC-V 5 and RISC-PC is same but different to RISC-V 5 and a Raspberry Pi, there. I guess source code-wise, there's about 120 modules in a ROM, and there's probably about 110 of them are common to everything. And then there's the video driver, the USB driver, and the HAL Ethernet driver. So four. Okay, maybe there's four or five modules that are unique to each platform, and the rest of it, all the toolbox modules, I think, are just common. The window manager is common to everything. Yeah, lots of common code.
Do you have any idea what sort of price CJ and Archon are talking about?
I haven't got a price for it in the case, but the latest hot-off-the-press news came into my inbox at 16:59 today. So I just put my coat on, having run the taxi to get to the train station, to say that CJ have them in big case, if you ring them up and ask and request, but they're... I guess the marketing drive, for want of a better word, is not going to happen until February. So that's, only a few weeks away. I could well imagine the next question. So they're expecting to get a smaller case, like a horizontal version, rather than a tower case. So,
like the RMX6?
Yeah, the other way around, so you can put the monitor on top of it rather than a skyscraper. So yeah, they have that orientation, it's called a MIDI case already, but they're trying to get hold of some horizontal ones. And thanks for showing, sounds quite reasonable.
So
yeah,
we've got to sit and wait until then to find out.
Yeah.
Or do it yourself now.
Yeah, or grab a screwdriver.
Yeah.
I'm very happy to take the side off this one now. If anyone wants to
have
a look inside.
Are there any applications? Software differences between that processor chip and any of the others?
So the Cortex-A15 is an ARM Architecture 7, which is the same as the Beagle board and the Panda board. So compiled code-wise, they're the same, but architecturally they run different. One's got a special branch predictor, and one does out-of-order execution, other general enhancements, but ARM code-wise, anything that a Beagle board or Panda board are where we could call them their architecture in the same instruction set.
What support do you think giving to having an independent display on the other DBI output? So you can have two completely different displays.
Okay.
What sort of programming support will there be within response for that?
I haven't thought of that situation, but... in principle now, the primary desktop head is the one that RISC-V knows about currently, and there's another one that I've painted a test card
into. Yeah, so that test card, is that in the RISC-V kernel, or is that just...
No, that's in the graphics driver. And all that happens is on power-up, the graphics driver says, oh, RISC-V, there's a screen over here, can you draw me a test card, please? So the font manager plotted the text, I drew the little chevrons in the corners, and then I say, oh, actually, no, RISC-V, it's over here. Sorry, I was misleading you.
So could anybody program that?
Yeah, so if you look up the base address, which is usually 8, 8, 9, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, If you wanted to put a clock on that screen, you could do that this afternoon, this evening. Yeah. If you're prepared to poke the bikes yourself.
On the artwork viewer, if you're doing like presentation, you can have this projector.
Yes. Yes.
Slide.
Had I not been fiddling with the CD drive at the weekend, I was half thinking of flashing something up so I could put the presentation on one screen and then have something else on the other one just to show off. But no, I ran out of time. It's only 48 hours in a weekend. I'm asleep for at least 16. Just show it. It's a big empty box. Yeah, hopefully no smoke, and I'm pretty sure there's no mirrors either. And there we go. So I did bring, in case anyone's bamboozled by specs, I have some printed versions of the spec that was available at the show, which you're welcome to do, or if you want to ask me anything about that. And if you want to move the table a bit.
It certainly doesn't need such a big box.
Yes, it is mostly an empty box. So I've got my SSD drive.
And not a lot of spaghetti.
Yeah, reasonably neat on spaghetti. Parallel port card in there. I've taken the USB cable, which then comes out somewhere on the front. And those two old there. And then that's the standard layout for the push buttons for the power on, the flashing light when the hard disk is being accessed. The two buttons reset and power on.
Press the video turn off. No. What did you need to do to sort out the EMC?
So the EMC was mostly coming from the video cards, video drivers underneath. So I added some common mode chokes to that. I don't know if you're electronic engineer or have been. Or
I understand what you're saying.
Okay, so I put some common mode chokes on the data and the clock lines for that. And I also discovered, maybe by chance, that the shell was not grounded. So I made a mistake in the CAD footprint for the connector. I thought, plug it in. Unplug it. Oh, it gets louder. So we eventually discovered that, yes, the shell was not properly grounded. So all the effort of making a shielded video cable was completely wasted because all the connectors were empty at the other end. Yeah, that was soldered at the test house with a big blob of solder. On the production board it's done nicely with tracks, but on one of the shops, on the test house. If I don't, if you keep your eye on the standby LED, plug the mains, we can then carry on talking for a couple of minutes, waiting for it to finally power itself down.
What's that?
So yes, as I said when I was doing my slides, this is the beta version of the board, and that was me testing out a different switch mode power supply. So the regulator for the starter interface got a bit hot. I didn't put your finger on it, but it was uncomfortably warm to the finger touch. So I thought, well, we can make a switch. So we'll run out of battery. So I thought swapping it for a switching regulator would help me out on the thermals. So that was me prototyping it. Unfortunately, the chip was not stripboard compatible, so the chip's actually lying on its back, and then I've used wire up and pencil wire to turn it back into strip board.
Does that power supply come with the case, or is that one of your special little power jumps?
No, that one came from eBay, I think. Oh. Yeah. So Corsair is a perfectly well-known American PC manufacturer.
What do you look for to get a suitably low power jump?
So my starter for 10 was to find the lowest wattage in the range. they do make ones that go up to a kilowatt, but yeah, so 350
is basically look for a low wattage.
The lowest possible one that they have. That's not a complete, so just going for the lowest isn't always a guarantee. Because some of them require load on one of the rails, but not the other one, and then other manufacturers have done it the other way around.
Right.
So a little bit of careful looking at the data sheet to make sure that they want the load on one of the rails that is actually got some stuff on the rails. So quite a few of them will try and regulate off the 12-volt rail, and there's really nothing happening at 12 volts in this case, other than perhaps the heart. If you have a spinning heart, it's going to motor in it. Yeah. So yeah, just careful looking at the data sheet. But not had any problems that I can recall from the Corsair.
This circuit board, it looks a little bit thinly populated.
Yeah, so there are some bald patches, admittedly. Yes. So here, the way where there's a load of fire holes at regular intervals, there's absolutely nothing.
Yes.
Completely blank.
Because all had that all that space to play with.
all the layers have nothing at all, and similarly in that square there, absolutely nothing happening.
Yes.
The other places, although they're blank on the top, have tracks going inside that you can't see. So for example, the Ethernet interface, both of those route from the corner of the chip up in that direction. So on the top layer you can't see anything, but it has something in the
layer. So many of these other boards that you say are like for mobile phone development, that kind of thing, scatter all the IO all the way around the board.
Yeah.
So clearly your main design feature here is to try and put it all where it would be a tobacco case.
Yeah, yeah. And that ultimately governs the width of the board as well.
It governs all sorts of other things.
Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Including some of the empty space.
Yeah. Yeah. So on a DCX, if you sort of wind the clock back 5 or 10 years, you would have had a full length DCI card there.
Yes.
Full length socket, and that would have used up that floppy space there.
Yes.
But because it's now PCI Express, you end up with an itty bitty 3/4 inch socket instead, and just a load of dead space.
Which, and you've got one for
the parallel capital jet for my fixed programming.
Yeah. So is that actually accessible via Briscos?
Yes, yeah. So I did briefly type star PCI devices in the listing. It appears in device FS as parallel colon. And you can print through printer manager to it. I have a parallel laser printer at home, so my primary use, as I say, is for PIC programming that. Yeah, you can print through printer manager to a parallel printer.
So what is the SD card used for? Is it used for anything? Because it's printing on the flash.
Yes, yes.
There's nothing on it at all.
No, I just... quite happy to take it out and send it back in again. it's just got dance, magic dance in it.
So I was just thinking, when you're saying wanting to support the Ultra IQ, it won't necessarily provide
the system. I think the way I would envisage it, or the way I would imagine it, is it's just another solid state disk. So maybe you back up your photos once a year on it or something like that. It's just storage. It has no requirement, you don't need it to boot off. Or maybe you put your booting.
I was going to say, essentially, if you don't need an SSD, you could...
Yeah, you could get away with just an SSD.
Yeah.
The green light's gone out.
Never mind.
I don't know what you're talking.
What's the speed of the new ADFS compared with the old ones? Does that mean...
Without remembering the benchmarks off the top of my head, it's something like 130 megabytes per second, depending on the speed of your SSD. So it's hard to compare. You used to get about 2 megabytes per second off a RISC PC, maybe like 240 on a Ionic, something like that. Yeah. So it's somewhat drive dependent. But yeah.
I was rather meaning comparing light for light with the drive, because obviously one's a Fender and one's Seek.
Oh, right, I see.
Just out of interest.
Yeah, so most of the work is not in ADFS. ADFS really only send out the old ATA command every now and then.
True.
Most of the work is in DMA and the data around, and that's not a function of the software. That's how fast you can DMA data from one port to the RAM. So I would suspect if you ran, though you have a parallel ATA version of it, but if you ran a parallel ATA version of the same ADFS on an Ionic, I don't think it would be any different speed to the current ADFS on the current Ionic. The software is not where the time is being taken, it's the time is taken to DMA and the data to RAM.
Probably
should have made it in there, but we've got 12 seconds, if I remember rightly, yep. From on to I can click stuff in the desktop.
That would be
CD. Yeah, it spins up the CD drive as well on this way. Yeah. Yes, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
What's going to happen to the pricing again?
I think that's probably going to be based on what I see happening with the Linux version. So if someone there places an order for several hundred, then suddenly I can ring up the API distributor in Germany and say, oh, I want to order big boxes this time, can you give me some discount? As a random thing that I can memorise, that's just $72 or something like that for one. So it's never going to reach Raspberry Pi.
I wasn't thinking it would, but I was just wondering if it was likely to be an increase or a decrease with time.
Yeah, I don't anticipate putting the price up, no. But the weather standard is really based on someone to start facing some bottlenecks.
Of our company, CJ.
The primary advantage of using our company CJ is that they buy them into boxes of 10. So it's not so much that they're buying large quantities, but frankly, buying one, but buying 10 for the first day. What the advantage is normally this one tenth that the admin is overall, and that's where the real saving comes from. So yeah, don't be able to take
the
cross.
Yeah,
something
for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, thank
you.
Oh,
the table.
Well, is it wrecked? The other question was, were you selling the keyboards?
The keyboards are for sale, yeah. I didn't bring any spots with me tonight because I came on the train and I've already got enough money to look for the two.
What are you doing?
But yeah, keyboards are for sale. They're on the LSR website. Both Windows versions with the Windows flag or
Common one. Should just supply both keys and swap over that key card.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, yeah.
So that have the four fight to bring
Ratio-wise,
if it was 10% risk to SS top, 90% Linux, that's probably the mix that I'm expecting.
Yeah. And what are you up against? Are there any other ARM desktop kind of boards? Or?
So not as far as I'm aware, and that's part of the gamble, as I show my slides, everyone tries to fit them onto the smallest square that they possibly can because they're trying to be robust on purpose. Yeah, so offering something that's in a standard form factor, for it in a standard case, the EMC data for it, hopefully, yes, that will attract some people who are thinking of things other than robust
development. Yeah. The application, I mean, probably not very
applicable. We are
working at computer graphics.
Okay. Yeah, so the chip can address a 40-bit block that has the large physical address extension LPAEU, but it's currently only fitted with 2 gigabytes.
Yeah.
So in principle you can fit 4 gigabytes on the controller. Address that then fits in a 40-bit address space, but ultimately the RAM control is limited, or your limited factory is 4 gigabytes.
So we would need more, like, non-gigabytes.
Rendering frames, many frames,
But one of the other possibilities is that it's not even some part of the space, or use some of the air-consuming vessel
This one has XGX 544 imagination technology. Not again, can't be doing nothing. Also resting peacefully.
Still our vendoring isn't done using GPU support.
Oh,
right. No, because they don't tend to have enough RAM to be useful. And they're very bespoke.
Trying to get a compiler for a GPU is probably
There's lots of tools that's available, but every year then there's a whole new way of coding. Maybe slowing down getting skills. It has to be the whole ecosystem around it, not just the processors.
To be able to hire people that can write vectorized code, parallelized code.
Yeah, and in the end, if you're going to spend the money, you might make a saving on per watt on the hardware, but then have to spend 4 times as much on development time.
Yeah.
You can be in the world of fossil economy.
Yes.
So, I don't think it's really the platform for our
Definitely not happening with the 64-bit on the V8 one architecture on the base.
The
they can address. Use a Google or Facebook are trialing ARM-based servers for just no air conditioning, very little air conditioning needed. And that's where you save money.
That's what the council offers as well. Less power hungry, because we just don't have, without reaching out to more and more expensive co-location.
Yeah.
It was one of the big server companies, I can't remember who it was, when it was Facebook or somebody of that sort of thing, who decided to build a server farm way at the top end of Finland, purely because the outside temperature was so much cooler. The air conditioning costs were less.
Yeah.
Greenland is really good for that.
And it's right up at the top end of the Gulf of whatever it is. It goes right up into there.
It's
a long way north.
Yeah.
You trust you more in cabling to get your cabling electric up there.
Because they've got hydro electric.
Very long fiber optic cable back to Europe.
I guess that's a one-off cost, whereas the air conditioning and the electricity is very ongoing.
Whereas for us, we have to lease the cables, so we find it to the exact same cost if we locate machines in London versus moving them gently out of London. The cost remains exactly the same because whilst their costs of maybe premises and another cost go down, the cost of connectivity goes up with almost exactly the same proportion. Well, that's exactly it. Why all our equipment then is essentially in central London, or at least down in the Docklands, because it's easy to access then. And it wouldn't be any cheaper if we put it in Manchester or York or any kind of off the beaten track location. So. Did we work Fenless Power Supply?
I subsequently discovered that, yes. Yeah. Solid State Power Supply was no fan at all. I found that trying to buy those, they're about £110. Okay. So they're quite, so that was, that particular one was £15 off eBay.
Yeah.
I think they're about 40 if you buy them in the shops.
Gently.
Solid State ones were near £100, I
thought. There's a nice little quiet.
I remember the initial presentation of
I think that was probably one of the ones I found.
Yeah,
ended up by saying, and you can't hear it, listen. And we couldn't.
I'm just on a mission to build my silent desktop PC.
Ah, right, okay.
Well, the stupid thing was, years ago I had a silent desktop PC and it had no fans in it, and it had, and the hard disk was in a cupboard over the other. coming off another machine. But then my nice quiet PC got louder as the processors got more and more fanned up.
Yes.
So
like the ones that change pitch quite annoying as well. You set it off running a cab, a flood fill or something in the cab, so it's we're taking off somewhere.
Yeah.
And then it calms back down again.
Yeah.
The process of fan back. I don't know, my cold clammy hands tell me that that's not warm.
We've had a driver trying to remove some of the power hungry. In our office everyone sort of has a great workstation with a couple of hard drives spinning away, and we've just started doing things like removing one of those drives and in every machine, and because the air conditioning in the office is having such a hard time thinking with the number of machines. It just doesn't make for a healthy working environment. It's noise and heat coming out of the machine.
Can't see the icon though.
Sorry.
Not the machine.
It's
a big PC.
Okay.
When I'm working in an office, then the office aircon is time to go off at tick. And suddenly... quiet. We didn't do it. We got used to the rumble.
Yeah.
Oh, I brought
that. You ever worked in an old-fashioned mainframe computer and when they turn the power off there? It took about 10 minutes to power everything down. And halfway through, you think, I've gone deaf. It kept on getting quiet. A strange feeling.
The downloads page has a ROM on it. Not particularly exciting. There we go.
New icon.
So you mentioned helicopters a few times. Is that because there is somebody with a project? It's
a project that I have previously worked on many years before this.
So has anyone expressed interest in what sort of projects have you got?
Because I've not shouted about the Linux one yet. Don't currently dare. Yeah.
Shame the Emerson family aren't here, because Michael Emerson has with CJ and something.
Okay.
His father had worked for, I can't remember, one of the big aircraft companies, and they use kind of BC Micro's Archimedes to test the helicopters.
Oh, right, okay.
They're still running the stress testing.
Yeah.
And we keep trying to get him to come and talk about that. Because if they still use it, I can't now remember whether it was Risk or Space or BC Micro Space.
Use a Power PC and VX work.
Yes. Was that part of the any sort of important system on the helicopter?
No,
sort of
they didn't let me loose on anything like critical. It's 41 Celsius the processor core.
Go FM on there, that's a good...
Yeah, I realised...
Actually, should have run that, actually, General.
I realised that was one of the things I was supposed to show, wasn't it?
Anywhere in London is quite slow to display, because we've
got down a couple there. Yeah, all
right. Or rather, on other machines.
I haven't used that on a Noctis machine, so for me that looks normal.
Okay. That takes a while. I could fire up my Raspberry Pi again and do the comparison for you if you want to.
Yeah, how many Raspberry Pis is this? No, genuinely, how much?
It's a pound. Pound in weight.
Yeah, processor-wise or money-wise.
But they also get raspberries.
Yeah.
There is a thread called Benchmark.
Oh, there is, Crystal
seems to have one of everything.
The current clock speed, 1.5 GHz.
Yeah.
And of course, someone's bound to want to try and overclock it. Does anything?
I'll invalidate the warranty. I couldn't possibly comment. Right. Stadium.
That's a 0.0, yeah.
I know, right? 3, 8, 1, 2, 1, 1, 7. No, it's 7.
5, 6 times.
Yeah. 6, 4, so it'd be 24. Yeah. Yeah. It's about 5 times, I think.
The second benchmark down is probably memory or something, isn't it? I imagine.
Memory rectangle copy icon. When I do that, it jumps back up to
me again.
Yeah. Could be that. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the difference with these SATA on the ARMIC 6? That goes through
USB, doesn't it?
Yeah, it goes through SCSI, doesn't it? So that's SCSIFS, which translates SCSI commands back into ATA commands, and ATA commands get transferred to startup commands. Yeah, it's going to go through three levels of translation on the way down, three levels of translation on the way back up again.
Is that money for efficient?
Yeah, the beginning, I guess. The bottleneck, the hardware, aren't
they? The bottleneck, anyway. Yeah. The older machines on the end of that.
Yeah, that's why it's now so white. Oh, we're back to a risk PC.
There we are. The column heading to there. So, half this read, 178 megabytes per second. ARMX 679.
CCLF 2. Well, I thought it was about. That's my memory for the module, but that's quite a good figure for a RISC PC. That really is maxing it out.
Yeah. Yeah. 2 on RISC PC.
But it still works, sir.
23 on an Ionic. 79 on an ARMX 6. 178 on Titanium. I win.
Well, you've got a newer processor than anybody else.
That's very true, yes, yeah. Yeah, came out.
So you're not using most of its cores.
Yes, can only get faster.
So are the other cores of all the other processor bits being used on the large port?
Yes, so there are some funky 3D, kind of Newton's Cradle 3D graphics demos and stuff that you can run on the Linux one. And yeah, if you do top, it will tell you top. It will tell you your CPU usage, and it shows it spread across two ARM cores, because OS is primarily running on the ARM cores. I don't think it does anything with the Cortex-M4s. I think they are sitting idle in Linux. I don't think it does anything with the DSPs, not that I remember.
They're accessible, though. They could be used as a spoke.
Yeah, so there are. You can load binary blobs. There are some shuffled binary blobs, like the Newton's Cradle thing, that you can load onto the remote processor.
Right.
Some of the text that wizards pass when it boots up to say remote prop checking for firmware, no firmware found, and it's pulled it back again. So I believe they are accessible, but the default distribution doesn't give you anything to do with it.
The strength of that Cortex chip over the ARM.
So the Cortex M4 is a microcontroller version, so it's part of what I think has been branded later as Big Little. So you have the big processor, i.e. the applications processor, so the Cortex-A, doing most of the work, and then it can then power down and not do very much, and you leave Cortex-M processors, the microcontroller version, just doing housekeeping tasks while you're asleep.
So they're not specifically powerful processors?
No, they're run at 200 megahertz or something like that, and they only run some code as well, they don't run normal ARM code.
And also the lack of memory management.
They do have caches, but yeah, they access, I think they've got 64K of RAM or something like that. They're basically micros.
Is that an outcome of sort of mobile phone style of development there?
When
it's idling.
Exactly, yeah. So when you're fetching a web page, you use the big processor to get all the grunt, render it, and then when you're just sitting waiting for someone to stroke the screen, just use the Cortex-M processor because you're only looking for a stream stroke. Very careful. You don't need to leave a 1.5 gigahertz processor to be waiting for that. So yeah, it's just a very similar idea. Obviously, in an industrial situation, you would have that where, for example, you might get the Cortex-M processors to do the Ethernet packet handling or something. The 200 megahertz processor can perfectly easily manage Ethernet traffic coming in and out because you're just pointing DMA in different directions.
Yeah.
And you could then put the main processors as you have other applications.
My suggestion to RISC-OS is to offload the network stack onto one of the other cores.
Yes, and that has been done on one of the set-top boxes. Main Cortex, the main ARM9 ran the OS, and then the network stack ran on the other spare random core that was not doing anything. Mm. That has been done.
How difficult is it to do that again?
In principle, not really.
Just somebody has to spend some time doing it.
It takes time, and you end up wondering whether what you achieved gave you any of the benefit that you wanted. So with this, the gigabit Ethernet comes in through DMA, so it costs nothing to receive the packets, and then you have to send them to RISC-OS to process them. So if you were to put the network stack on a different core, all you do is you get the packets quicker, but then you still have to pass them to RISC-OS to do something with them. So you're just moving a problem somewhere else, so you still ultimately end up having to send the packets back to RISC-OS to do something with it.
And then you have to rewrite it all when the next one comes along.
you end up with quite specific code.
Thank you,
Thank you.
Yes.
Good night.
Mm. The real time clock chip, is it NXP or a Dallas?
It's a Dallas, yeah. Dallas 1307.
Does the I2C interface that controls it come out anywhere else? Can it be used externally? I found a RISC-PC, it comes out to the podium part.
There is an I2C bus that comes out to the back header there. It loops through the PCI socket. So that header, although it's not fitted.
So that could be wired out to the back panel.
Yeah, that could come out as an I2C bus.
Is that 3 volts or 5 volts?
Yeah, it's 3 volts signaling it. Yeah. Don't think it comes out in any other use.
And what about SPI? Is there any support for that?
I'm sure somebody asked me that, I forgot to look it up in the schematic. I'm reasonably sure something that's SPI comes out on that header,
Don't quote me on that. I need
some email
Find the TRM.
Read the TRM or email me, and I'll have to remember to go and look it up in the schematic. I think I did look. It's got crazy numbers. It's got 12 UART and 7 SPI.
How easy would it be to provide an expansion card that has got some extra buffering circuitry on it and GPIO ports and SPI and I2C?
Buffering as in electrical buffering or buffering as in FICOs?
Electrical buffering.
Okay. I would solder it to one of, probably that header would be my choice.
Then people could start using it for what they use the BBC Micro for.
Yeah.
You've made a keyboard.
If you squint and don't tell anyone too loudly, that is the same pinout as a user port.
Right. that's what's going around in my head.
It's no coincidence that it's 20 pins, 8 IOs. Yeah.
It can't work the same because you've got no 6522.
Yeah. It doesn't go through a via, no. But it is pinout compatible.
Yeah.
Is there any you've got the SATA ports, but in a way they're sort of on their way out at the minute, aren't they? Everyone's using MSATA, which I understood was a lot simpler. Is that a decision?
I haven't seen any move in one direction or another. My understanding of the MSATA is because laptops, you don't need the intervening cable, so you would buy a drive that has the MSATA on the back of it and screw it into the laptop.
Yeah.
But for a desktop case, I don't have any of those constraints.
Yeah. I understood there was a performance thing of removing some part of the, particularly the SSD's assessment.
Not one that I've heard of.
No, I just bought a PC recently and it's only got an MSAT. I mean, it's a tiny little thing, Intel-based PC, and it's only got a little MSAT.
These run at 3 gigabits per second, so that's 300 megabytes per second potentially.
So MSATA has a different connector.
Yeah, but you can get sort of 500 megabytes per second out of those MSATA devices. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe it is tipping the limit of what goes down the cable. But 500 megabytes.
What is the cable of a cable?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't know. Is that
significant? Well,
I
can remember when big mainframe computers, supercomputers, were made round so that the interconnecting cable could be shorter.
Yeah.
An absolute mess inside.
Well, with the Craig, all the cables were made short as possible, but then they were all the same length, to mean there was no timing oddities or something as well. So I'm sure that must be a slight fault. That must account slightly for the rat's nest. They are all as short as possible, but now they're all as long as each other. you could have a stack of these in a round circle like it. And that would make it go faster. You could tell people.
Another little play on that keyboard.
Play some Debussy.
That's basically all your work with him. The other people in the background. This is all me. You'll occasionally get paperwork done by other people.
But NSR is basically you.
It's a really good job. I mean, I don't know where you start doing something like that.
It's a sheet of paper.
No, it's phenomenal to see, though.
What was the ratio of technical time spent
administrative and jumping through hoops.
I have time to see. Actually, it's the nearest quarter of an hour. I could calculate it.
It's interesting to know what the balance was. Because obviously the admin is just there to support.
And often technical people aren't good at admin.
I wasn't thinking about that. I'm just interested in information.
A few hours a week would be my guess on admin, and the rest on technical.
Were you I mean, I guess you've been bold enough to sort of pack in your job and do this full time.
My work has been very generous in letting me take a sabbatical.
So this is
if it all goes pear sabbatical. I do still have a full time job to fall back to,
So how many months of development did you produce?
Just over a year.
Wow. Yeah. And to stay on?
About 13 months or something. Yeah, it was supposed to be 12 months.
Yeah.
Ran over slightly.
So that's... I wouldn't have the discipline to focus on a project.
And then in August, I got bored of that light and keyboard.
Okay.
In September, I did nothing.
You said you were waiting for the NDA to expire or something?
For it to become public. I couldn't,
So you couldn't actually say anything to anyone else?
Yeah, very annoying.
Well, you couldn't even say that you were working on it.
You couldn't even talk to yourself about something. So other people signed through NDAs, I can talk to them about the thing, just the same. But, the effort of waking up lawyers in order to agree NDAs is a lot of effort, so not letting many people talk about it is a lot cheaper way of doing things. You have to wake the lawyer up 4 times, that's tolerable. You have to wake the lawyer up 10 times, and that's lawyer hours. Yeah. NDA.
The lawyers always win.
When actually most people don't need to know.
Didn't need to know yet.
Telling additional people would not have affected the outcome, so don't bother telling extra people, don't bother waking up the lawyers.
You can put some nice artwork in these faces on the board. There's so much space. You could put a BBC owl on or something.
Yeah. I think I put in that spare space.
Well, it would certainly make it distinctive, though. I mean, it's a slightly frivolous point, but... in the global market, if it was visually something quite cool, it would.
The other way to go, of course, is to get some laptop cases and shrink the board down and get rid of the wasted space putting a laptop.
Yeah.
I think laptops are probably on the way out, though, aren't they, really? I mean, it's not like desktops aren't, but. They're still there for
hobby.
If you want something to travel with and you want a proper keyboard, you need something like that?
Oh no, undeniably. I personally will have a laptop.
Yeah.
I think it's more just... It's been predominantly replaced by tablets for the most part.
That's all right. Can anybody type large amounts on a tablet?
No, but...
I was thinking I'm the wrong person to ask about those sorts of things because my usage patterns are I use CAD software to design circuit boards, so I would two big monitors. Yeah. One schematic on one monitor, PCB layout on the other monitor, and I want a big fast processor that can chew through my design rules really quickly and do all the flooding really quickly on a nice keyboard. So I can't imagine doing that on a tablet. I think
no, we're all atypical in that regard, though, aren't we?
Yeah, I'm not the right person to ask what is current computer trend, because that's not what I do.
How do you even write an email?
On screen with keyboard.
Every time you put your finger somewhere, you get the next one along from what you already wanted. So I gave up on it.
The tablet's difficult that you can achieve it, but I find mobile phones... absolutely impossible. I cannot use those keyboards.
If I got the biggest phone I could at the time.
Yeah, that's almost a tablet, isn't it?
Yeah. When that came out,
I took my phone with a real keyboard.
Yeah. And I went, that's too huge. That's way too huge for a phone. Yeah, most of the phones are that size. Again,
I just can't get. I can't in my head make it replace my desktop PC, which has got 3 screens, even though I want it to be quiet.
I'm still using this.
when I can't. Oh, my God.
Drop a keyboard.
Drop a keyboard.
Is this the same printer as what you had at
£450 plus VAT, £498. I'm expecting CJ and Arcom definitely to be less than £999. I'd be astounded if they have the cheek to go above that.
Logically, they probably
I'm not going to guess what their pricing policy is, but and the ARMX 6 is
£799,
I guess they don't want to cut their own.
But they got to recoup the cost of the board, paying you, case, PSU, hard drive, CD drive.
All the quantities of everything.
Keyboard, screen, smart.
Factoring how much time they might spend on the phone to people ringing them up going, how do I get this to work? Why
doesn't it happen?
Yeah, I did bring the...
you had that
The mail's gone, yeah. Sorry.
You had the price this time.
I can tell you the nearest penny. All right.
Exciting over the limit prospect.
So, $10.99?
$799 with email support only.
The DIY kit was 2007, I think, this web kit. So in 2007, they had reduced that. I think they were $12.99 when they came out with it. They also something like that, yeah.
I said the bare motherboard is $599.
Is that plus that, probably?
Inflationary. Prices are going down and processing power going up. It's the right way around.
Thank you very much.
Good night, thank you. Thank you.
Ah, you forgot to put your SD card back.
Oh, put that in my wallet. Somebody got danced with it.
No, you found your way here. I guess you can use the SD card socket to create cards for Raspberry Pi.